Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Dave, and it has been just a blessing to be able to lead this discussion on the Family Struggle Bus as we've been talking about all things and all struggles related to raising kids and living as a family. And when I put together this series several months ago and looked at this date, Mother's Day, I thought to myself, I'll preach on Proverbs 31 as a way to just honor the mothers. I had never really preached on this passage or studied it in any depth, so I thought this would be a great idea to just, you know, compliment and inspire and encourage all of our mothers. And then I sat down to actually study the passage, and I discovered that this is what the passage is all about. It's about wisdom that a king received from his mother. And so as I studied this passage, I kept thinking about Forrest Gump, like mama says, mama always told me, because this is really what it's all about. And the main audience in this passage, I've never thought about this before, but the main audience is young men. Okay, so if I could have all of the young men, and you can decide whether or not you fit into that category, if I could have all the young men to just sit in this front row right here, I'm just kidding, you don't have to come up. But this really is who this message is primarily intended for, which means if you're a mom, you're actually excited because I'm going to speak on your behalf. I'm going to be the mouthpiece of the moms in the room to say, young men, this is who you need to look for in a future spouse. And as we go along, there may be some nuggets for the rest of us. But before I jump into Proverbs 31, let me just talk to you about something that's very, very important when studying the book of Proverbs, that Proverbs contains probabilities, not promises. In other words, Proverbs are a general rule. If you follow this, this probably will happen, not this definitely will happen. Here's an example. Proverbs 22, verse 6 says, "Train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it." That is a probable thing. If you raise your kids as Jesus followers, they will probably become a Jesus follower as an adult, but there's no guarantee. Like some of you, I've talked to so many people through the years that would say, yeah, we taught our kids the scriptures, we took them to church, and one kid stayed on the path and the other kid no longer believed. So again, it's a probability. It's not a promise. It's not a guarantee. Here's another probability, not a guarantee. The fear of the Lord adds length to life, but the years of the wicked are cut short. So as I love to say around here, when you follow Jesus, when you apply biblical principles to your life, you'll be healthier and you'll probably live a longer life, but that's not a guarantee. I mean, Jesus' disciples all died young as martyrs, or you could experience a tragedy or have cancer or something like that. But generally speaking, if you apply biblical principles to your life, you will in fact live a better and a longer life. So all that to say is Proverbs communicates probabilities while Ecclesiastes and Job communicate the exceptions to those probabilities. For example, Job was this really, really righteous man who experienced extraordinary suffering. His kids were killed. His kids were righteous, but their lives were cut short. And then you read Ecclesiastes, and the author of Ecclesiastes says this, "I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me, and who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool." In other words, I'm going to raise my kid. I'm going to train a child in the way that he should go, but there's no guarantee that when I leave my inheritance to my children that they will use those riches wisely. It's a probability, but not a promise. It's a probability, but not a guarantee. So with that in mind, we're just going to go straight through Proverbs chapter 31, and here's how it begins. "The sayings of King Lemuel, an oracle or wisdom that his mother taught him." So again, this entire proverb is a mother's wisdom that she gave to a son who would become a king, and now he's passing it along to all of us. He writes this, "Oh, my son," again, speaking on behalf of his mom, "Oh, my son, oh, son of my womb, oh, son of my vows, do not spend your strength on women, your vigor on those who ruin kings." In other words, don't be like all the other kings that I know about and that I've heard about, Mama says, who just get so wrapped up in women that they forget to rule properly. Maybe she's thinking of King Solomon, who things were going really well until he married 700 wives and it fell apart and the kingdom split up. She's like, look, don't get so obsessed with women because kings are powerful and they have authority. Don't focus on women. Focus on ruling well. And then she goes on and she says, it is not for kings, O Lemuel, not for kings to drink wine, not for rulers to crave beer, lest they drink and forget what the law decrees and deprive all the oppressed of their rights. So in the Jewish scriptures, what we call the Old Testament, there's two books named after women. One of them's Esther, the other is named after Ruth. And in the book of Esther, we discover at the very beginning that King Xerxes, who is the most powerful man on planet Earth, spent 6 months displaying his vast wealth and his power. People would come from far and wide to experience the glory and the grandeur of Persia led by King Xerxes. And at the end of that six-month period, he has a seven-day feast. And the text tells us that the wine was flowing and everyone was drinking and they were festive. And then the text says that when he was in high spirits, you can interpret that however you want to, he says, hey, get Queen Vashti to come out here so that I can put on display all of her beauty and all of the people can go, wow, you have such a beautiful wife. So they go and they tell Queen Vashti and she's like, I mean, he's off his rocker. I'm not doing that. And King Xerxes is like, all right, then you're fired and I'm divorcing you. And then he makes a law in the land, and he makes these laws because he's not right in the head, because he's just, again, he's got all these resources and all this power, and he uses it for his own selfish gain. The mama says to King Lemuel, don't be like that. Make sure that when you're designing laws and you're writing laws for your kingdom, that you do it sober-minded. Don't be like the other kings. And then she says this, give beer to those who are perishing, wine to those who are in anguish, and let them drink and forget their poverty and remember their misery no more. Now, I'll let you interpret that however you feel is best to interpret that. But here, essentially, the mama is saying, look, you're a king, and you have a lot of resources, and I want you to use your resources to be a blessing to the poor and the marginalized in a world where kings mostly did not do that. Here's the summary of what she's saying. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy. Be a good king, right? Be sober-minded. Use your resources. If I could summarize this entire section of Proverbs, Lemuel's mama is saying, don't ignore the poor. Don't ignore the destitute. Don't ignore the marginalized. Use your authority and use your resources and leverage it on behalf of those who can't help themselves. Don't be like every other king. And then she goes on and she says, I'm going to give you some advice for a woman that I want you to look out for, a wife of noble character who can find. Now, you know who else asked this question? A man named Boaz, who shows up in the other book named after a woman named Ruth. And Boaz is described as a man of standing or a man who was worthy of respect, a man of character, a man of noble character. And one day, Boaz, this man of standing who has a bunch of employees and they're working out in the field, Boaz is here in Bethlehem just doing his thing. Right, just looking out for a woman of noble character. And meanwhile, over here in Moab, we have a woman named Naomi who's got a husband, and her two sons are married to Orpah and Ruth. Well, eventually, tragically, her husband and her two sons die, and she's left with Orpah and Ruth, and she says, you guys just stay in Moab. Just go back to your family. And Orpah eventually stays and starts her own talk show. And Ruth is like, no, wherever you go, I'm going. Like, I'm loyal to you. I will follow you wherever you go. Your people will be my people and your God will be my God. And so Naomi's like, all right, fine, come on. And she's bitter and she's kind of struggling with it. And they eventually make their way back to Bethlehem. And Ruth, who is, she has nothing. She is poor. She's destitute. She's just lost her husband. She's hanging out with this bitter mother-in-law, but she's loyal to her, right? And then one day, she's out in the field just working and gleaning the grain so that she can eat, sweating in the hot sun. And Boaz asked his foreman, "Whose young woman is that?" And they say, "Well, that's Ruth. She came back from Moab. She's loyal to her mother-in-law. She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." And the book of Ruth is fascinating. It's only four chapters. You could read it when you go home, but it's a story of this strong man of standing who ends up marrying Ruth, who would become the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother of King Jesus. But you know, it's interesting, the only woman in the entire Bible who's described as a woman of noble character is Ruth. Now, to be sure, there are lots of women in the scriptures who had noble character, but she's the only one that's described in that way. And she was simply someone who said, "I will be loyal to you, and I'll work hard, and I'll do whatever it takes to survive." And Boaz noticed her. The author goes on, "A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies." So there was a ruby that recently was sold at an auction for $34.8 million. Right? She's worth more than rubies. She's worth more than you can even imagine. Her husband has full confidence in her, lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works eagerly with her hands. She is like the merchant ships bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it is still dark. She provides food for her family and portions for her servant girls. She's a hard worker. She does whatever it takes to provide. If you were here last week, I talked about it's a good idea for you new dads to every once in a while get up in the middle of the night if it requires a changing or a comfort, the little child. But let's be honest, it's mostly the wife who gets up in the middle of the night, right, and still has to get up early and take care of the kids or go to work or whatever it may be. She considers a field and buys it, and out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard, and she sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable and her lamp does not go out at night. And in her hand, she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. These are these sort of ancient tools that she used to make clothes, right? And even though most of you moms probably don't make clothes, you know that it's a lot of work just to keep up with all the clothes, especially when they get into middle school and they got new shoes that they need like every other week. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. This is a woman who works vigorously with her hands, right? Hardworking woman with her hands, and also opens her hands to the needy and the poor and the marginalized and those that are easily forgotten. And when it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. And as a result of this hard work, her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land and receives the cases that are brought to them so that they can make a judgment. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies the merchants with sashes. And she's clothed with strength and dignity. She not only produces clothes, but she is clothed with strength and dignity. And whenever she speaks with wisdom. And faithful instruction is on her tongue. And this is maybe one of my favorite verses in the entire chapter. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. So if you're a mom, you know, maybe you're a stay-at-home mom or a working mom, homeschool mom, moms have to take care of a lot to be able to manage the household. And all the mothers said, amen, right? So I made a list. I sat down. I made a list of all the various things that my wife has to do just to take care of the household. You know, many of you can relate to these, right? Scheduling doctor's appointments. Oh my goodness, all the doctor's appointments and vaccinations and registrations for activities and payments for the activities and pictures. I mean, it's like every other week you got a picture that you need to have taken at school or activities or clothing and shoes. Again, kids grow out of clothes so much and you're always trying to figure out, make sure they have what they need. Matching socks, which is kind of like a magic trick, right? Man, you ever try to do the laundry and you dump out the socks and you're like, I just think I want to throw all these away because none of them match. And then she comes in, right? She pulls socks out of a magic hat and just gets them all to match. Or all the cleaning that needs to be done, shopping and cooking and kids helping with their homework. And once they get past second grade, none of us really know how to do homework anymore, but she somehow figures it out. That show is smarter than a fifth grader, should be smarter than a second grader. Transportation, right, getting them from here to there, organizing rides. How about this, day off from school? Because in the summertime when they have a day off, you can plan for it and you know it's coming. But when there's a snow day or a Friday or a Monday and they have a day off, I mean, coming up for something for them to do, that's hard work, right? Discipline, as we talked about last week. How about this one, comfort? I mean, sometimes I'm like, I wish the boys would come to me, but they don't. They always go to their mama for comfort. So last night, it's about 7:30 at night, almost exactly 7:30 last night, which I had a sermon illustration from last Saturday night at 7:30, so I'm going to be watching out for 7:30 next Saturday. So we're doing this digital detox where we're avoiding, you know, movies, video games, those kinds of things for 3 weeks. So we're sitting in the living room, and Jen has our little daughter at a shower in Pittsburgh for my sister-in-law. So we're sitting in the living room, me and my three boys, and the two youngest are like, we're going to do a pillow fight. And so they leave, and they do their pillow fight, and my oldest, we're just sitting there. I forget what we were talking about. About 2 or 3 minutes later, my 9-year-old walks into the room, and he looks like he had just gone 15 rounds with Ivan Drago. And I mean, his chest is covered in blood, and there is blood up and down the hallway. And I wish I could tell you that, as I talked about last week, the three what's that I was able to, you know, be quick to listen and slow to speak and ask the three what's. But I did not come anywhere close to asking the three what's. And I said some things in a tone that I'm glad is not on a videotape. And I said, boys, I'm kind of like freaking out. You know, urgent care. I said, boys, you better clean up this blood before your mama gets home. And I put the kid in the van, and we're driving to the emergency room at Guthrie, and I'm thinking to myself, that stupid digital detox. If we had been watching a movie, we could have watched a movie with a crime scene instead of living in a crime scene. And I finally get him to the emergency room. You know, we're there for like 3 hours. He finally gets the staples in his head, and I'm talking to Jen. She's like, what happened? There's blood all over the place. I told those boys to clean up that blood. Well, apparently they didn't figure out how to clean up blood out of the carpet. And so I finally pull up, you know, at like 11 o'clock at night, the van pulls up and the house is clean. All the blood's cleaned up. And my 9-year-old sprints into the house and just gives his mom a big old hug. And he gets the comfort that he needs. And I say, I'll see you. I'm going to bed. And I think he's fine because I have not seen him yet. I think I did see him for a second, but I think all worked out. But isn't it true, like, man, the moms are good at comfort. They're good at providing that comfort. That's just part of the long list of things they do. Birthday parties, I mean, come on, all the work to organize a birthday party or even to show up at a birthday party. You got to find the right gift. Christmas gifts, whoo, vitamins, you know, what kind of vitamins they need, nutrition, diapers, packing for vacation. It's like I don't even like vacations anymore because they're just packing, even though I don't even do any of it. First aid and the list goes on and on. All of the details that come into play when it comes to managing a household. And I just have to say to all of you mothers, bravo. Bravo, because it's extraordinary. And Here's what you get to experience, ladies, because you know this is true for you every single morning, that when you wake up every single morning, your children arise and they call you blessed. And your husband looks at you and says, oh, I praise you. You're doing such a good job being a mama. And the doves come out and they raise up the curtains and everybody gives you breakfast in bed, right? I mean, you're like, yeah, that happens once a year on Mother's Day. It happened this morning and that's about it, right? Because we forget. We men, we forget all that it takes to be a woman of virtue, a noble woman of character. And so we want to say thank you to you mothers who do that. And I want to say to all of you young men, don't compromise. Don't compromise, because many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. You surpass them all. Now, some of you might be thinking to yourself, actually, I know a lot of women who surpass my wife. Or I know a lot of women who surpass my mama. And I just have to say this. This is worth coming to church for, just to hear this. You treat your mom or your wife like a Proverbs 31 woman, and she will become one. You treat your wife like King Xerxes treated his wife, and she probably won't become one. That's a probability. That's a proverb. That's not a promise. But that's a truth you need to store away in your heart. You treat her like a Proverbs 31 woman. And maybe she'll become one. He goes on. He says, charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting. I mean, all you got to do is spend a little bit of time with high school and middle school students, and you know that looks are a big deal to them, right? Too big of a deal. And we, young men, okay, because this is for you, young men. The rest of us are just listening, right? Young men, here's what you need to know. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Because as the Apostle Paul says, though outwardly we are wasting away, inwardly we are being renewed day by day. We're reminded of that every time we look in the mirror. Don't be so obsessed with looks, because charm and beauty is deceptive and it's fading away. But a woman who fears the Lord, she's worthy to be praised. So give her the reward she has earned and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. So if you've fallen asleep during this sermon, or if you're watching online, you've been doing the whole Amazon thing. Here's the summary, right? This is so good. Again, this is like 3,000 years old, and yet it's still so relevant. Here's this mama, right? Mama says, and this King Lemuel is so wise to pass this on to us. Here's the summary. Don't ignore the poor and wait for a woman of noble character. Don't compromise on that. Young men, have a vision for what you want your future spouse to be. And if I could include the young ladies in this as well, right? Single people, all the single ladies, don't worry, I'm not going to quote Beyonce, but all the single ladies, you need to become someone who cares for the poor, and not just the financially poor, but those people who are at your lunch cafeteria area, they're sitting by themselves, they get made fun of. You're called to be different. You're called to care for the poor and the marginalized and those who are hurting. Those who are struggling. You're called to be someone who works hard, like Ruth did. Just got in a field and you worked and you trusted the Lord with the results. And you fear the Lord, because as Proverbs says, the fear of the Lord, that's the beginning of wisdom. And then you see how the Lord might work. If I could say to all the single ladies in the room, you demand that he become Boaz, not Bozo. And I know if you're single, you're a single lady, some of you might be frustrated because you haven't found your Boaz yet. But let me just say this. It is better to have a season where you're walking around with a little bit of a frown than to be hooked up with Bozo the clown. So demand that he be a Bozo. Demand that he be a man of standing. And don't compromise on that. Have a clear vision for a woman who fears the Lord, a noble woman. And we just want to say to all of you ladies today, we're so grateful for you. Nobody is a perfect Proverbs 31 lady. We're not here to celebrate perfection. We're just here to celebrate how noble you really are and how so easily we forget as men to encourage you and inspire you and to tell you thank you for all that you do. Ladies, thank you for your noble character. Thank you for the fact that sometimes you walk around with 8 different arms. Thank you for the love and the comfort that you provide for all of us. And forgive us for not taking time to honor you for it.